Ramble.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
I would argue that this movie is not about lying. It's actually about the failure of the public school system.
It's just past the start. It has an Oscar nominee.
Also, Amanda Bynes is in it.
Fuck, man. Those are the best elements of any movie ever. You put them all together, big fat liar.
Yeah.
Marty Wolf Pictures, please hold. Welcome to Guilty Pleasures, the show that loves what it loves. Guys, today we're talking about Big Fat Liar, the Frankie Muniz, Amanda Bynes, Paul Giamatti classic.
Wait,
yes,
hold on.
Kelsey?
Hold on. 1 second.
Yeah, I'll hold.
I thought you said, this is not a joke. I thought you said we were watching Liar Liar.
No, Kelsey.
No, Kelsey.
Kelsey, what?
Wait.
Kelsey, no.
I'm not kidding. I thought you said.
Wait, we are seconds into the podcast with our special guest, Becky Haversberger from You Can Sit With Us here in the studio. Her favorite movie is Big Fat Liar, and you're going to sit here, look me in the eyes, and tell me that you watched the wrong movie?
Kelsey.
Wait, I deadass watched the Jim Carrey movie, Liar Liar, today with my entire family, and I forced them down, and I said, this is for work, we have to watch this. We all watched it, and it was great, and I took notes all on the movie Liar Liar. I've never seen Big Fat Liar.
Boy, yeah. It's incredible.
Kelsey, it's one of the best movies that's ever been made.
Big
it's so good. What do we
liar.
Do? Someone here has seen it. Hold on real quick.
Oh my God.
I'll be right back.
Okay. I feel like I should watch this anyways because it has some very funny reviews online.
Yeah. And it was Amanda Bynes' first role in movies. It was her first film role. Frankie Muniz was just coming off of an Emmy and a Golden Globe nomination.
I cannot believe I watched the movie. This is so funny. 14-year-old compulsive liar. So wait, isn't it basically Liar Liar?
No. So it's like the premise is he is just a straight up liar. We found someone. I knew it was Will.
Right. Oh my God. Okay.
I've seen it.
Kids, don't do drugs because clearly I can't fucking read anymore. Have a great episode. Thanks, Will.
Oh my God. Guys, buckle up. Welcome to Guilty Pleasures. Today we are watching Big Fat Liar. Garrick is out and now Kelsey's out, but joining us in the studio, we're ramping shit up. We got from You Can Sit With Us, the wonderful, enigmatic Becky Haversberger, and as our last late minute fill-in, a man who said, quote, I love Big Fat Liar, haven't seen it in 10 years. Try Guys homie Will Whitwer.
Yeah, no, I love Big Fat Liar. During the pandemic, I started rewatching the scene where Paul Giamatti finds himself blue.
Yeah.
And I think it's incredible acting work. I really do.
Couldn't agree more.
1,000%. The guy who delivers the, they didn't say anything about a little blue man. That guy does the most in 2 seconds, more than any actor's ever done in the history of acting.
That guy can be like, kids, gather around. Your grandpa was an actor. I had one moment and I made it count. His 5 seconds of screen time are more meaningful than anything I've done in my career.
So much storytelling.
Guys, we are talking about Big Fat Liar, not Liar Liar. This is the definitive lying movie. We're going to come to Becky in a minute for why she loves this film so much. But real quick, a quick synopsis, since it's clear we're not all on the same page here today.
Nope.
Big Fat Liar stars Frankie Muniz and Amanda Bynes. Frankie Muniz is a liar. That's what he does. Jason is just great at lying. He lies about his homework. He lies to his parents about eating breakfast, everything. But he gets busted by his teacher, played by Sandra Oh. Fun to see her. And on his way to do the final assignment that'll keep him from summer school, a story that he wrote about the ills of being a liar, he gets hit by a limousine in which Paul Giamatti's Marty Wolf, the big hotshot movie producer, is driving in it. So Marty steals his homework and sees it as the inspiration for his next great film. And so Jason goes to Hollywood to reveal the truth and to prove to his father that I'm not a liar. For this one time, I'm telling the truth. And along the way, he's going to try and make Marty's life a hell and show him that lying ain't all that. Yep. Basically.
I think that's right.
That's pretty much it.
Also, Amanda Bynes is in it.
Amanda Bynes is great. I mean, this movie has genuinely no right to be this good. Mm-hmm. But Becky, you freaking love this movie more than anyone I know.
Yes, this is my all-time favorite movie I've probably ever seen in my life. I watch it probably once a month. Maybe like we skip some months. Back when I worked at the AMC movie theaters, we had to write our favorite movies under our name tag. So I had a few rotations and Big Fat Liar was on there just so I could tell people all about it.
I saw it in theaters.
Yeah. My family went to the movies every Friday.
Yeah.
Like, didn't matter what it was. It was just like, we're going to go to the movies.
Yeah. We literally went to the movies so much that when I worked for the movie theater and they were allowed to go see movies for free, they had to make an announcement to the staff to remind us that like if our families were coming in, that they had to like sign in and do all these things. And like literally the manager is just staring dead at me while this is going on. And I remember my mom being like, we saw Jackass. You know, there wasn't anything else to do today. Nothing on TV.
I mean, one of my favorite memories of childhood was after maybe Spider-Man at New Rock in New Rochelle. It was a big multiplex. My buddy Eric and I snuck in to Agent Cody Banks. Because, you know, you would just like, you just sneak into movies when you're done. You just keep it rolling. It was the end of the movie. And it's that classic in the movie, the false death, right? Agent Cody Banks, Frankie Muniz defeats the bad guy. We sit down as he, and then the bad guy pops up. And Eric goes, and I'll never let him down. Once a month.
Ish. Sometimes it'll be more, sometimes it'll be less. So we like catch up because Keith has to watch it with me too. And he admits it's a good movie. It's funny.
It is funny.
It has an Oscar nominee, an Emmy and Golden Globe nominee. I'm sure Paul Giamatti's also been nominated for a Golden Globe. But like Frankie Muniz I was telling Rainey before, fresh off of an Emmy nomination. An Emmy and a Golden Globe for Malcolm in the Middle.
This is like the time in the world where Frankie Muniz was on top of the world.
Yes.
Malcolm in the Middle, he rolled right into Agent Cody Banks. He rolled into this. Oh, it was from Agent Cody Banks.
This is pre-Agent Cody Banks.
Right. Yeah.
And then Amanda Bynes went from this. This was her first movie role, and she went into What a Girl Wants, starring Academy Award winner Colin Firth.
And I could be wrong, but I do believe that this was before Sideways. So, Paul Giamatti, you're welcome for your career. Yeah, I think this was pre-American Splendor as well.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was. Listen, I haven't watched the movie in a while. I'll try not to talk too much. But the one thing I did want to say
Will, you're the star here today. We need you, buddy.
Frankie Muniz doesn't remember his time on Malcolm in the Middle from being in a car accident because he became a professional race car driver and then he lost a lot of his memory.
Yes. He got this like thing where it was basically like a stroke and it cut off his circulation. And now he doesn't remember Malcolm in the Middle.
It is unbelievably good. So yeah, we talked about Frankie Muniz on the show during the Fast and Furious episode. I was delighted and shocked to learn that Frankie Muniz drives, as Garrick would say. He's a huge driver. But then I was deeply saddened to learn after the episode that, he experienced some head trauma. And that's we'll circle back. But both of the gifted youngins in this film have experienced some trauma in their lives. And we thank them for the childhood that they gave us.
Yes.
For real. I think Malcolm in the Middle is still a great show. I was such a fan of that. I honestly love Young Frankie's acting oeuvre pretty much across the board.
100%.
Agent Cody Banks aside, I think that stuff is maybe not so good. Yeah. But
Just in Time, or was that the name of the Disney movie where he did the little race car?
Oh, shit.
He was like...
I have not seen that.
I think he was in a wheelchair.
No, it was based on a true story. I feel like I have part of my memory, like a race. I'm like, what you're saying sounds real.
He was in a soapbox derby or a race car.
Yeah.
Right?
I honestly cannot pull that. I feel like that would be right in my wheelhouse, though. I watch Malcolm in the Middle reruns every day.
Every day?
Yeah, basically, because it was The Simpsons, Malcolm in the Middle, Seinfeld.
Oh, I thought you meant now.
I thought you meant currently lost.
No.
You kind of are. You got a little Frankie Muniz vibe, honestly.
I definitely do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
just not not as successful, I guess.
Well, who not many of us are.
Oh, well, what's Frankie Muniz doing now, Will?
Racing cars.
Ask yourself that. And you're here on this podcast.
You're right. Absolutely. You're right.
I mean, while we're talking about Frankie, let's start there as one of the pleasures, because he is an absolute delight. And his character, to me, is just such wish fulfillment for who I wish I was as a kid.
100%.
Oh, yeah. And the adults are against him. Like, the whole movie is just adults, like, being rude to this kid. Like, he has to lie to survive. Like, Sandra Oh makes his assignment worth a third of his grade, and it's just a 1,000-word story on anything?
He is 14. There's no world in which a 14-year-old should have one assignment being the majority of their grade.
Yeah. And his parents, like, won't drive him to the community college to drop off the paper, but they're able to, like, go to the community college when he doesn't have it. Like, they're against him.
Yeah, and he always has the right thing to say. Like, even the first scene against the bully, he is like, he's a fast talker. He's wittier than everyone else. He's smarter. He's got all the plans. I would argue that this movie is not about lying. It's actually about the failure of the public school system. Because
they close the door on him at the beginning.
Yeah, because he's a second late. They close the door on him.
Like, what the hell?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Frankie is a gifted storyteller.
This is a movie about how we're failing the gifted children in our school system.
You got to adapt to the way that he needs to learn. You're telling me that this kid spontaneously comes in and makes up this beautiful moving tale about a meatball nearly killing his father, and you're not going to reward this kid with extra attention? You're going to threaten to hold him back?
When was this movie made and released?
2002, baby.
Okay, I was wondering if it was pre or post 9/11. See, I have a big thing about judging art between, like, you know, because 9/11 changed this country in many dark ways.
Yeah. And
so, I didn't expect this to come here. Really?
Like, for example.
It's true.
The song Mambo Number 5.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Most pre 9/11 song in the world.
Will,
1999.
I cannot believe you're saying this, because I, for the longest time of my life, have cited pre 9/11 R&B as my favorite music genre.
Yeah.
And it is admittedly the darkest and most fucked up joke that I have. But it was a more innocent time of music.
The 90s were so innocent, you know?
And then the world changed.
The world changed. And I bet that happened while they were making it. So
I would imagine that this was a pre 9/11 production, a post 9/11 release. Therefore, while it is post 9/11,
it's still essentially a pre 9/11 text.
Pre 9/11 sensibilities. Yeah. Much like much of the music of Fat Joe you think of as pre 9/11 R&B, even though it actually came out in 2002, 2003, it was cooking for a while.
Yeah, 100%. It's not just about what year it came out. This feels, because it's sort of the story of a guy who, you know, like, he's cool because the school, the institutions aren't succeeding for him, but he's cooler than them. It's an essentially American story, right? Like, a child who's gifted and who does it through his own individuality, you know?
He's a creative storyteller.
Yeah.
I mean, what are some of the things that you love about this movie, Becky?
Oh, yeah.
It's just packed with stars. It's like a hit. It's a hit maker. You mentioned the bully. It's Taron Killam. Saturday Night Live and Hamilton thing.
I saw him play the king in Hamilton. I forgot that he was in this movie, and I'm like, oh my God, look at you.
Yeah, you're like a young Sandra Oh playing a teacher, which was like a big thing in her career. She was like always cast as like a teacher or principal. Paul Giamatti is like one of the funniest, like, comedic actors.
One of the great
of
American
time.
Actors.
Yeah.
We will give a full 20 minutes of discussion to Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. And the main reason that I watched it, because at the time I was 12, any 12-year-old girl in 2002 wanted to be Amanda Bynes.
100%.
Like, the dream was to be Amanda Bynes. And I saw she was in the movie and I was like, I need to watch this 1,000 times and study her movements so I too can be like Amanda Bynes.
Has there been a single actress with the comedic chops as a child as Amanda Bynes since Amanda Bynes? Like, maybe you could say Raven Simone had it, a touch of it, but Amanda was a fucking powerhouse as a child. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
And I didn't even have cable. Like, I only watched like all that with my grandparents' house sometimes, but I still remember being like, wow, this, like, watching the sketches, like, there's the popcorn pants sketch, you know what I'm talking about? Where the, you wear, like, it makes popcorn in your pants. It's so funny.
Yeah, and the Amanda Show, even after that, like, Moody's Point that she did on that show was so good. Fucking funny.
I mean, when she was on all that as the youngest cast member, like, baby Amanda, and she would do, Dear Amanda, that's me. Like, me as a child, fucking shitting my pants laughing. Yeah. You said every 12-year-old girl wanted to be her. I was a little boy. I wanted to be her.
Yeah.
She was an icon. She was everything I wanted to be in a performer. I just couldn't believe how wonderful she was.
Yeah. I would say her only comparable child actor would have been, and I don't even remember her last name, but Mary Beth from All That.
Ooh.
Which is like kind of dark to look back on because you're like, well, I can look at them and see why one made it in early 2000s Hollywood and one didn't. Like, it was very like telling of the time that we were in. But that Mary Beth chick was.
She was amazing.
So funny on like Figure It Out and All That.
Yeah.
I keep wanting to say she's All That.
We're like getting now into like Nickelodeon lore, but to be on Figure It Out was my absolute dream in life. I had this such a intense, detailed fantasy of going on for a talent that I did not possess, winning. Summer Sanders is like, wow, you're amazing. Do you want to get married? And I'm like, yes, Summer Sanders, let's do this. And then the producers are like, you're so funny. Even though we normally have Nickelodeon stars as our panel, we're putting you in, kid. And I just, like, me and Danny Tamborelli and that fucking Kevin guy who was way too old to be there, we're all hanging out. Mary Beth is there. I'm married to Summer Sanders. Life is good.
Kevin's too old to be there, but a 12-year-old's going to marry Summer Sanders.
There's a little bit of flexibility in this fantasy.
The age gating.
Yeah. I do feel like there's something about all of Frankie and Amanda as child performers that they just represented an ideal that then when they kind of turned, not Frankie didn't turn all the way.
Right.
He had some bad politics, but we're not going to get into that.
No.
A little bit.
Frankie, no. Yeah.
I mean, he's a rich guy who races cars. So, I mean, what are you going to do? But Amanda Bynes' like turn and all the scandals that enveloped her, I think we're sad because it ties to our own like childhood nostalgia and memory of like how like really vibrant she was when she was young. But she's like the co-lead in this movie. Like, she does not get to deliver all the jokes, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. Like, it's Frankie Muniz's movie, and then she's the number two on the call sheet.
I would argue it's Paul Giamatti's movie.
Yeah.
I think if you watch the film, I think he has the most screen time. Yeah, I mean, she makes the most of her screen time in this film. She doesn't have the best moments, but some of the moments that are still in my heart, like, Marty Wolf Pictures, please hold.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Or the, I want him to cry like a baby. Wham! 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 Like, just so intense, so good, so fast.
You know what? Here's a very minor, but an important pleasure of mine, is I stan a platonic friendship. You know, it's very rare in these childhood movies to have a boy and a girl, best friend, and it don't turn weird and sexual at any point. They're just homies. Yeah.
That's a really good point. I think I've always had, you know, close female friends, and like, there are so many movies where they just sort of reflexively are like, now kiss. And this movie doesn't do that. Maybe because they're too young, but it could have still gone that direction. They could have ended like holding hands, but no, they're just buddies. Yeah. They're trying to like pull pranks.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
They're just hanging out.
It's like the end of the Lizzie McGuire movie. That was my big gripe, is like, why Gordo need a little kiss? I get that he's a bro, but they're just friends. And this, like,
they're not just friends. You clearly didn't watch Lizzie McGuire, the TV show. All they talked about was how much Gordo likes Lizzie.
I know, but like, come
fake
on.
Fake fan.
I am
we were
a fake
waiting
fan.
For that.
I wasn't.
We were waiting
like,
for the
I
smoochy
was,
smooch.
But I'm mad that it had to be, because you know Lizzie wasn't feeling it. You think Lizzie was feeling it?
Wow. She was into it.
This is a controversy.
She was into it.
But she wanted that Paolo.
Paolo was too old. Paolo was a grown man. That Marty Wolf Pictures scene is actually one of my all-time favorite scenes in the movie because of what it...
All-time favorite scenes in the movie.
In the movie, yeah. All-time favorite scene in the movie. I have a few favorite scenes, but that's one of them. Right before that, when Amanda Bynes has to tell Astrid Barker, who loves dogs, Barker, that her car is parked on a dog. And she's like, yes, ma'am, in the tail region. And the woman on the phone is like, my car is parked. And she's like about to vomit. And it's just the most like ridiculous child lie to say that you parked your car on a dog's tail.
It is. I also wonder Was it Amanda Bynes, who was just the world's greatest improviser, or who was the adult feeding her lines? Because she's talking to Adam Sandler on the phone at one point, which, yeah. Okay, kids would know. But then she talks to Steven Soderbergh, which is such an adult joke.
I think she did it on her own.
You think Amanda?
Unfortunately, some of the people that were higher up in that movie are like now... sort of like disgraced people, other than the Stranger Things guy. People say he's fine.
Yeah, so it's directed by Sean Levy, who is incredible. He's done a lot of big blockbuster movies, but...
He also has a cameo in the movie.
What's his cameo?
So at the party for the fictional movie Whitaker and Fowl, starring Jaleel White, aka Urkel, where Urkel is a cop and his sidekick is a chicken, everybody is talking about how bad the movie was. And they have like... the guy from Saved by the Bell.
They have Screech. Yeah. Who else is there?
Kenan Thompson has a
quick cameo.
And then Stephen Levy's like, worst movie in history. But he just like screams it in the middle of the room.
Oh, that's so fun.
From what I can tell, Sean Levy seems to be a dope dude.
Yeah.
Produced and directed Stranger Things. We will just acknowledge that Dan Schneider wrote the film. He is a he is an unconfirmed but a purported creep. So we're just going to go ahead and say we're going to leave it at that. You made a good movie. We don't support you as a person. Moving right along.
Scooting along.
We talked about the cast and actually kind of stopped before we even rounded out the cast, right? So you got...
Oh, yeah. Jaleel White.
You got Jaleel White in the role of a lifetime.
Which I really loved because when I was when I watch it, I'm like, you know when you watch kids' movies and they're clearly jokes for adults?
Yeah.
The joke for adults was Urkel.
Totally.
Like that. Because
kids don't know. I didn't know who Urkel was when I watched this movie as a kid.
What are you talking about? You didn't watch Family Matters?
No.
Well, I watched Family Matters, but I didn't like think it was funny that they kept calling him Urkel. I was like, oh, whatever. But like when you're older, you realize how like upsetting that was for him.
Yeah.
And he's like talked about it in depth before about how he like, I think he has a quote where he was like, if you ever see me in those suspenders or glasses, just shoot me. Just kill me. I don't ever want to do that again.
I weirdly like, that was my sense of humor, is having like an Urkel, like Jaleel White as himself made me laugh so much. It's kind of the same as like in Avenue Q that Gary Coleman is a character.
Yeah.
It was just that idea of taking an old sitcom star as himself. I don't know why that always makes me laugh.
Yeah, I feel like I probably laughed. And again, it has been a long time since I watched the movie.
No, Will, you're an expert. You prepared for this. You came in.
But like, I'm sure that watching it, I laughed, even though I didn't get the reference. Because I feel like I was sort of the same way. Like, I get the idea of the big picture thing. I just don't get specifically who Urkel is.
Yeah.
Like, even now, I never watched it. Like, I know it only through other pop culture references. Like, The Simpsons.
You have to watch Urkel jumps the shark so hard, but in the most amazing way, where Urkel splits into two characters.
Yeah, he
Urkel
gets a hot machine.
Stefan.
Yeah.
Stefan is a stud.
I've heard people talk
and
about
this. And
they
keep him around.
And yeah, he gets like a sexy alter ego, which is funny because Urkel's like so unsexy, I guess. Anyway, this is me processing old pop culture, I guess. But
Urkel is one of the true great TV characters. A hell of a performance.
Oh, yeah.
Really love that fan. Honestly, Carl Winslow, one of the great TV dads. Love
oh, for
it.
Sure.
We should give a shout out to who I'm realizing is maybe one of the unsung guilty pleasures MVPs, Mr. Donald Faison.
I was going to bring him up. He's the taxi driver, right?
A limousine driver, sir. How dare you? But we've talked about him. He has small roles in Pitch Perfect, in Josie and the Pussycats, and now here he is with a supporting role in Big Fat Liar. And Donald Faison, I just want to say thanks, man, for all the joy you've given me in my life.
I also feel like it was all just like leading up to him getting Scrubs. Like he's like, I'm just going to take this one last part playing a doofus. But then he ends up playing like almost the exact same character as he is in the movie, just as a doctor.
One of my predominant memories of the movie is him like introducing them to LA and the way he says Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
that really stuck with me. I don't know why.
It's so weird, like, because again, you said you haven't really genuinely watched this movie in so long.
In a long time. I tried to rewatch it in quarantine, but my friends didn't want to. It was pissing me off.
You need new friends.
We were in a bad movie club, no offense. And I was like, let's watch Big Fat Liar. It'll be easy. We'll have a good time. And nobody wanted to watch it.
Well, that's why they didn't want to watch it, because it's not a bad movie. So it wouldn't have
It doesn't qualify.
Right.
Disqualified.
Paul Giamatti. As Marty Wolf. Please.
So... funny. Everything about him is funny. He has like such good, he's kind of like oh, what's his name? Michael Scott.
Oh, Steve Carell.
Steve Carell. He's very similar to Steve Carell, where he does comedy so, so well, but he's also such a good actor
yeah.
that he finds this like grounded realness that comes from like a drama training. And you're just like, how did you make this horrible man who literally says, basically, like, if you look back on the movie, as with a lot of early 2000s writing, there are like, I would say, six jokes that like
wildly problematic.
Wildly problematic. Not good.
Mm-mm. There are a couple I was like, oh boy, I don't remember that one.
And you're like,
I'm guessing there's some like fat shaming kind of situations.
Fat shaming.
And then every like racial stereotype that you could have.
Like he meets the movie studio's wife and just calls her every stereotypical black name instead of her name. That one was shocking.
That one is always the one that I'm like,
Paul.
God,
Paul, what are you doing, bro?
Paul.
You know, we can blame Dan Schneider. Yeah. Fuck you, Dan.
That's probably it. Fuck Dan Schneider. That man wrote some shitty, shitty jokes. But it is one of those movies that you can watch back, and there's really only like six bad things that happened in it. Like, other than those six.
Which is incredible for the early 2000s.
For that time, totally. That is, like, looking back, like, there are a lot of, like, kids' movies or, like, movies that we watched in the early 2000s that, like, I could absolutely not rewatch as an adult.
Oh, absolutely.
I
would the comedy like, just doesn't age well.
No, it was very bad. This movie just hits. The jokes stay funny.
While we're on the idea of fearing that your favorite movie won't age, there's the classic getting dressed montage where they're living in a warehouse and they put on all these wacky costumes. And I literally went, oh boy, no, are they going to dress up as like X? And no, you get one glimpse of him in a sombrero, which is
okay,
pushing it. But other than that, they kept it safe. And I was like, thank God, guys. Thank God. Because it could have gotten real dicey real quick there.
Yeah.
That said, I would argue Paul Giamatti like ties this movie together.
Yeah, so back
to
Paul.
The whole thing doesn't work without, because he is a Juilliard trained Yale actor who's done a lot of serious acting. He won an Emmy for playing John Adams. He's done everything under the sun.
Oscar nominee.
But this is pre-Sideways. He's not as famous. He's more of a character actor. And he like brings real pathos to this like really like poorly constructed comedy character.
Yeah.
I genuinely, if you are out there and you somehow have not ever seen this movie, if maybe you have a fuzzy memory from it from childhood, Paul Giamatti gives definitively one of the true great villain performances of all time. I said it. Hannibal Lecter, Marty Wolf, Darth Vader. Like, that is the fucking trio. Yeah. Like, he is out of control good in this movie. And I swear to God, when I was a kid, after we watched Big Fat Liar, I said, this man will win an Oscar someday. I was wrong, but also I was right. He is so
He's still good.
He's still got time. I just mean he hasn't won an Oscar yet.
Yeah. He's close.
But he's gotten there.
Yeah.
But like, fuck, man.
He's incredible. I mean, there's something about, he goes full Giamatti in almost everything, but I think this is a movie where he had to, like, that's why he was cast. It was like, you're the worst asshole in the world and you have to sell this guy and still be funny. And he's playing it for comedy, but like you said, sort of like Michael Scott, a character who's played so seriously, but for comedy, like it really is. He's the best part of the movie to me.
Oh,
like,
by
a 1,000%. I don't think Frankie Muniz. I mean, the kids stuff. Was like, holy shit, totally. You are the best child actor in the world.
You guys are saying like Steve Carell. I actually see him as like he's doing some Jim Carrey stuff in the very overheightened, but with a grounding that Jim Carrey didn't have in his over the top roles. Like he feels real, even though he's going full balls to the wall. Yes. The whole film.
And he goes nuts in this movie and essentially gets tortured for like the second half of it as they get their revenge.
It's kind of a snuff, a child snuff film.
Yeah, like with no danger, but like, oh, we're getting to something really terrible to him, and you feel great about it because he's just been such an asshole that all of their little plans to get him, you just feel so good when that happens.
Yes, he did it.
I mean, well, let's dive into what is the defining sequence of the film. And by the way, at the end of that sequence, when Paul, he has this look where he's been tortured, and Frankie Muniz pulls up in a limousine next to him and rolls down the window, and Paul Giamatti realizes that it's Frankie Muniz who's been fucking with him. The look of pain, of realization, like, that's acting. He is an actor in that moment. But there's just this incredible, delightful let's fuck with Paul Giamatti sequence that starts with them dyeing the, or putting blue dye into the pool so that his entire skin is dyed.
That scene's incredible. My friend on Zooms during the pandemic was putting that as his background, just the full like 3 minutes of Paul Giamatti, like, because he jumps in the water and he turns blue, but he doesn't see himself. No, he's walking through his giant LA house. He kind of is sort of going
dancing
up the stairs.
Dancing too.
What's
Hungry
on?
By the Wolf. Hungry Like the Wolf?
Hungry Like the Wolf by Duran Duran. He comes out, he hits the light switch, he goes, hungry! And then hits...
And he's in this itty-bitty like plaid bathing shorts.
Like, I think it's like Burberry bathing suit.
And then he finally sees himself and he just loses his mind. But you have the joke, of course, that he doesn't know he's dyed blue for several minutes, and you went to watch him just be like all confident about it. And then the rest of the sequence, I don't remember at all. I mostly remember him getting dyed blue. But
don't
that
you
stuff,
worry, Will.
Becky's got you.
Okay, good. Talking about jumping, okay, there's a so falling sequence?
Yeah, so that's the very end sequence. Okay. This is like the first kind of like fucking with him, is they dye him blue. And he only realizes when he gets in the shower, and then he's doing his shampoo and he puts it on his eyebrows and his weird goatee. Little goatee. And it's orange. And that's like when he finally sees himself. And so he freaks out. He runs away. He takes his phone and puts his earbuds in to call Monty, the assistant. And they have put super glue on the earbuds so he can't get it out of his ear. They also...
He almost crashes while driving his car because he is trying to pull an earpiece out.
Yeah. And he drives by this grandma where she's like, he's like, watch where you're going, blue boy. And you're like, why is this scene here? And then she comes back later and you're like...
A feisty grandmother.
Okay, grandma. Yeah. And then they give him the wrong address to go to a meeting with the head of the studio. They give him this child's birthday party where also one of the best child actors is this... He opens up the door and the little kid just looks at him and goes, they're like, that's the clown or something. And he goes, let's hurt him. And they all just run. And for the next
beat the fuck out of Paul Giamatti.
And he jumps off of this banister to tackle him.
They clown.
And he just does the no.
I love this alt reality where it is a given that the clown's job is to have the ever living shit kicked out of
him. It's so funny. It's really sparking memories for me because I remember that. I remember that scene. It's so funny. The kids jumping on him for basically no reason, but it's all like in the logic of the movie. It's like, you've seen how awful this guy is.
Oh
yeah,
you've seen it.
Oh yeah.
And you don't even really, he's just like unctuous and sort of awful in a way that unctuous. We can all sort of relate to, like he's a caricature, but like that guy is a guy, you know.
Oh yeah.
And then so watching him get dragged through the mud and beaten up by children is like very funny.
Yeah. Shout out to Will for using the word unctuous in the comment. I love it.
Hey,
it's a good word.
Yeah, I like it.
It's one of those words that means what it sounds like, too, which I always
love. It's sort of onomatopoeic.
Yeah.
Oh.
Will Whitworth.
I was an English major. I like words.
Please. Hell yeah. Becky and I were talking right before the podcast. Actually, we were texting about this. So while he's in the party, I would argue they go a little too far.
They fuck with his car by like ripping out the wiring. And you're just like... He's going to die.
They pull the brakes, basically.
They rearrange them.
The brakes, like when he hits the brake, the horn goes off. But when he tizzes his blinker signal, the windshield wiper, he very well could have died.
He probably
should have died.
This is a children's movie, right?
Yeah. It's a kid's movie. You can't. It's like Home Alone. They should have died 100 times in that movie.
In Home Alone, you one hit in the head, they could have gotten CTE from the like Home 100%. Alone sequence, right?
Yes.
like it's not safe. It's a movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It was fully fair. I mean, at one point in this movie, like the bigger sequence of them fucking with him is when they have all the adults in on it and they literally.
This is the climax.
Yeah. They literally have a stunt helicopter man fake lose control of a plane while another man hides behind a curtain in the plane. And then Marty and the stunt guy jump out of the plane with one parachute.
Wow. Yeah, that's right. Because I forgot about all this. It's all like, and there's like a thing he jumps onto. There's like a bouncy thing.
That's the very, very end. So what, at the very, very end, they bust Marty. They have secret cameras. And then Jason jumps off the building while his entire family is watching. But it's a stunt that we saw at the beginning of the movie where there's a giant inflatable pad at the bottom. When I tell you that I wanted to do that stunt so bad. Not even as a kid, like as an adult watching it back, being like, man, that'd be so dope. Like, can we just make Try Guys jump off buildings and just do that stunt?
I also feel like that whole, like, they're at the Universal lot.
Yeah.
So like everything you see there, you're like, I've been on the Universal tour. I've seen that water come rushing down. I know this.
And it's such a brilliant, I think this movie has three elements that really make it just like hit. And it's the wish fulfillment of the precocious kid, which always works. It's like, wow, this kid is smarter than every adult in the room. Okay. So that's one. As a kid, you watch that. Two, Hollywood wish fulfillment. They're literally the entire movie running around the Universal Studios backlot. They're hanging out with the DeLorean and a T-Rex and E.T. and they're living there and they are on the Universal Studios tour making that part of their thing. And then three, it's a heist. I fuck with a heist hard. Like literally you put those three together, it's a perfect movie. That those are the best elements of any movie ever. You put them all together. Big fat liar.
Yeah. There were also big stunts, you know. Yeah. We had the helicopter. We had a lot of practical stunts too. Like Paul Giamatti, I don't actually know if Paul Giamatti did this stunt himself, but jumping out of Jaleel White's moving car, you were just like,
hey, he's a good enough actor.
I feel like he would have committed.
I do think like this is really making me want to actually fully rewatch it because
I got the DVD right there, Will. You take it home with you.
I will.
You can also buy it for $4.
Okay, I'm gonna take the free DVD.
But you buy it, you keep it forever, and you can watch it once a month.
I don't know. Listen, but what I will say is like I don't know. Hearing Becky describe the plot of like the sequence where they're fucking with him is really, it was like, oh, I'm like, oh yeah, that did happen. And it's so fun. And I'm sure, I don't know. It's definitely not like perfect by any means, but for a movie that I loved when I saw it, I was the right age. Zach is a year older than me. So we probably saw it around the same time. And that precocious kid heist, just like doing the plans that adults can't follow and still winning somehow. it's really nice. But I do ultimately think the movie would be nothing if you didn't have a memorable villain character.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that there are lots of kids movies who the villain is kind of forgettable. And this could have been a forgettable, like just asshole guy, but they got Paul Giamatti to do it. So it's not. He brings real anger and he just has rage.
He also has love, you know, for Mr. Funny Bones, his little monkey.
I forgot about that.
And he goes, that's one part that I always forget until it happens at the very, very end. The actual thing that makes him like go nuts and be like, I'm gonna fuck you up, kid, is he takes his monkey.
Right.
That's the last straw. I was like, wow, what an actor.
In my memory, the monkey getting taken away really made me sad as a kid, even though but isn't that where they ultimately like do something like what happens to Marty at the end?
Well, in a stunning conclusion.
Okay.
So, you know, when they fuck with his car and he gets run over by the monster truck guy who like famously is like, oh my God. And he's just like, he's like a made famously for children character.
And then which then immediately follows by they told me about a little blue car.
They didn't say anything about a little blue man.
So, classic moment.
Classic.
Yes. So the very end of the movie is Marty is actually a clown now.
Because he's been disgraced from Hollywood. Which let me go ahead and tell you that if you are a hit movie producer and have not successfully invested in a way that your compound interest has let you float for a couple years to not be a clown, you done fucked up big time, buddy.
Really good point. He absolutely was a bad investor. And I think that's ultimately what the movie wants to say.
Yeah, you need to be careful with where your money goes.
Be careful with your money.
Yeah.
And, well, again, potentially you could extrapolate that as a failing of public school system, right? It's not preparing us for the real world.
True.
You need to spend your money and invest it intelligently.
Yes. But he's a clown and he goes into a house and it's the house of the monster truck driver. And there's a little boy monster truck driver dressed the exact same way in this like wrestling leotard, and then they just beat the shit out of him. I guess the like real penultimate moment is that when he runs out, it's right before they decide to do all of these like the really big heist with like the helicopter and the jumping off the building. Like the big moral moment for him is Amanda Bynes is saying, like, no, you're Jason. You have to, you know, you have to be able to have one more thing in your back pocket, one more prank. And he goes, I do. I have one more phase. And he picks up the phone. He calls his dad. And he's like, I haven't been truthful with you about where I've been the last few days. I need to tell you something.
Which is a really great, like, stripping, you know, the classic Joseph Campbell hero's journey, okay? You have the moment where the character's at the lowest and you strip away his power so that he may enter, reemerge as the victorious hero. And that is, like, genuinely him stripping away his identity. He is taking away his liardom.
Yeah.
And it's really effective. It's really, I mean, you talk about like there is heart at the core of this movie.
For
the relationship between Frankie and his father and his non-existent mother, who is literally just a prop of a human.
So when I was done watching the movie today, I was like, Keith, I don't think that mom said one
word.
I don't think she said one word. And he goes, no. I remember she said something at the beginning. So I rewound and found out her, I think, only line that I could find was, it's when Sandra Oh is telling them that he has to do summer school. And he's like, no, I wrote the paper. He's like, believe me. And she's like, I don't see how we're going to be able to do that, Jason.
She killed
that
line.
That's all she got.
She killed it.
Okay, not as good as the one guy, though, who did the little blue car.
No, I mean, that's real.
Because if you watch it, he has a moment right after he says it where he realizes that it's like not funny. And he like comes in and he goes back.
You can see the actor on screen going, I'm gonna be a goddamn icon.
And he is.
We should find out who that actor is. Is he on Cameo? Like, can we get him?
Oh, I'm sure we can figure out who it is.
They told me it was your birthday. Yeah. They didn't tell me about a little blue birthday. It's like so forced and bad.
That was so creepy when you say it like that. Like he's going to, maybe he has an OnlyFans, ooh, you know, and he's kind of like getting saucy with it.
He paints himself blue slowly while he gets undressed. Hey man, whatever you got to do for a buck.
But I do think what you're saying, Zach, about like if the moral is like if he keeps lying, he'll just be like this unscrupulous movie producer is like totally baked into it.
Unctuously like, unscrupulous.
It's like there's a lot of synonyms for bad. You know, a lot of different words to describe how people are bad. But like it's like how the MCU, a lot of the villains are like the analogs of the characters. This arguably set the template for that. No, I'm kidding. Probably not. But
I was trying to pull a thing. I was desperate to watch this movie and find my Killmonger was right moment because like there's part of me that is like Marty is justified in what he's doing.
Yes.
But then he is a tremendous douchebag and is undefendable. But like, if a kid dropped a piece of homework and you have the wherewithal to expand that into a movie, I'm going to go ahead and say this on record. You don't know that kid shit. Ideas are not copyrightable. You got to execute. Everyone has ideas. I want to see you make a movie. That's right. You haven't, kid.
Well, I think the true anger throughout the movie comes from Jason doesn't even want to be a part of the movie. He just wants him to call his dad. He asks him like 5 times, like, just call my dad and tell him I wasn't lying. That's all I want. I'll leave this room and you never have to see me again.
The first thing Paul Giamatti does is light a cigar and light his homework on fire.
And he stamps it out.
Which is such a reckless, douchey thing, which actually reminds me of, world. There's a huge viewership, huge Try Guys fandom, huge Guilty Pleasures fandom, all the guilty whores out there. That's what we call them. That's what Kelsey calls them. It sounds better from her.
Yeah, Kelsey can say that.
All of our little trash babies out there, one of you is connected to this film in some way. There is a prop house somewhere that has the Marty Wolf Pictures insignia, the pictures of Jay. Like, I don't know if you remember that his safe was behind a wall of interlocking pictures of Paul Giamatti's face.
That is so funny.
If any of these are out there, I will pay top dollar. I need a Marty Wolf Pictures like giant emblem in my home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maggie will not be thrilled.
No.
You put it in the office.
Yeah. I will turn Try Guys HQ into Marty Wolf Pictures. And if we ever get a receptionist, they will be forced to say Marty Wolf Pictures, please hold when they answer the phone.
Just making people play into inside jokes for important business calls. Yeah, no, I love it. I think that would be great.
Fully support.
I would really, really like that.
This movie woefully misunderstood understands how movies are made.
Oh, absolutely.
Like the fact that that they think that a four-page, 1,000-word book report is enough to be the basis for a film is so deeply insulting to screenwriters. But hey, man, that's how movies happen. And also, in this movie, there's no such thing as a screenwriter. The producers are responsible for writing the end of the film.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just need to call out the, you know.
Yeah. I think it is. Like, you were talking about like Hollywood wish fulfillment. It also was like kids who wanted to work in the movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like scene where Marty Wolf is all blue and he's standing up top and he's got Jason in his ear and he's telling him, well, actually, whenever, what's his name, Trooper or Trapper or something like that, whenever he lies or whenever he has emotions, he turns the color. So if he's sad, he turns blue. If he's angry, his hair turns red. And it was like hearing Jason tell him that as a kid, you were like, I could be a writer. I could do this.
Well, it's also that fantasy that's how movies are pitched.
Yeah,
it's like on the balcony to a party that like Hollywood is all like the news is already covering this film that hasn't even been shot yet. There's no trailer. Oh my god, the fantasy, if only IP were that easy.
Yeah, signage everywhere too on the Universal lot, like when they're doing the tour, it's all Big Fat Liar
or BFL,
Biffle as they call it in the industry.
I guess I don't want to give guilt to what I genuinely think is a perfect movie, but if I did have to give one, Big Fat Liar, the movie within the movie, is a horrible fucking movie.
Yes.
It is genuinely the least interesting plot for a movie. It's like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, where the baby becomes big, but he's a honestly, it's Liar Liar starring Jim Carrey, which is what Kelsey watched.
Yeah.
But if instead of him not being able to lie, he just turned into a giant and smashed things and then turned colors? That's
it's
bad writing.
It's a kid's movie, Zach. It's a kid's movie.
It's really bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree that I feel like that's just part of the plot. And you just sort of watch that and it's not the main draw of the movie. It's like what gets him to Hollywood. But it probably that part could have been punched up a little. That fictional movie could have been a little more interesting.
Been a little better.
Could have been something that we were like holding on to that I would remember.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't remember any of this about what the fictional movie was whatsoever. But I can remember Donald Faison saying Los Angeles or whatever. So I don't know. Maybe that's just a lesson of how memories work. But
no, that's all you ever find out about the fictional movie. That's literally, they give you one trailer, which I always ask Keith about that scene. I'm like, how did they film that? Because they have Frankie Muniz like floating up to the screen.
It's a great shot.
Keith goes, he's sitting on a crane.
Genuinely, I was watching it this time. I'm sorry
it's
to even
so
jump
good,
in. I was wowed. I was like, that's a really Frankie. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Okay. Frankie is watching the movie. And he's like leans forward, but his body starts levitating subtly off the seat. And it's a really good practical effect that like gets you into the mind of the character. It's subtle, but it was good.
It's good. And you see it on his face, too.
Good
like
acting.
I feel like he was really good at acting the same way Paul Giamatti, not the exact same as Paul Giamatti, but like his sort of training in Malcolm in the Middle was kind of that similar, like, doofy but lovable but annoyed
and precocious,
very precocious, and then like just very good at like doing things with his face.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say the only line that I'm always like, Frankie Muniz, no. Okay, so do you remember when they're in the limo at the very beginning and Marty Wolf is like, you know, I'm Marty Wolf, blah blah blah, and he's like, I don't know who you are, and he's like, I'm making the movie that's in town, and he's like, oh, and he literally does like this, oh yeah, you really made some stinkers.
Waving his hand in front of his face.
Points at him and then waves.
Okay, that's a little much.
That's the one where I'm like, Frankie, no.
The one that always gets me is when he has like 18 free Coca-Colas and he's just paddling the board and is super hopped up on sugar. I'm like, we didn't really need this moment.
I like his screams. I like one of my favorite lines that Keith is always like, I don't understand why you think this is so funny. Or like, he's like, I don't even think it's supposed to be a funny line, but it's when he goes home to tell his parents that his movie was stolen and Marty Wolf is giving an interview and he says like, you know, some ideas just come to you. And he just yells at him, yeah, from my backpack, you loser. Something about the way he says it, I'm like, yes, give him an Emmy. This kid is a star.
Give him another.
Another.
More. Run it back.
Yeah. So good.
It's a very quotable movie.
It's weirdly quotable.
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
I'm telling you, that's like my predominant memory of the movie.
There's one moment, Will, that you will adore when you watch it back. So in the final showdown, this is a real like deep cut. This is, again, like not a reference that I don't think any kid knew. And this was just something that Sean Levy wanted to do. That, okay, so they run out of the door and doves fly. And it's a callback to earlier in the movie. You have John Cho playing a director in this film, and he's like, you gotta shoot it 14 angles with doves. But it's
doves, like winged behemoths, I think he calls them. Yeah,
that's funny.
But it's a very direct John Woo reference. John Woo, incredible film director, directed Mission Impossible 2, a ton of incredible action films before coming to America.
Face Off,
The Killer, which is my favorite. And they have a direct killer reference in this film where they both dive for the monkey and they land upside down from each other with both of their hands on the monkey. And if you've ever seen The Killer, which I'm getting blank stares here, it's an incredible action film that always has these moments where it's kind of like one of the great homoerotic action movies, but instead of dicks, they have guns. So they're always just pointing guns at each other at the same time. It's the exact same shot. In Big Fat Liar, you have... Anyway, it just blew my
mind.
That's
awesome, actually.
It's really fun.
That's also where you get the... We were talking about that line earlier. The kastang.
Oh my God.
From
please.
Please.
Please. Well, I'll dip into the fun facts of this movie a little bit. Becky looked them up on IMDb, not knowing that was part of the show.
I was unaware. I was just like, well, and I will say I knew all of them except for like one.
Yeah. And this one, well, why don't you go ahead?
So the one that I didn't know was that the director... You know, another big fuck you to this guy was he did ask John Cho to use a stereotypical Asian accent for the part. Uh-huh. And John Cho said, no, I don't want the part. Sorry. And then after some like back and forth, they were like, OK, you could still do it and you can use your own voice. And the reason that John Cho said he didn't want to do the stereotypical accent is because he didn't want to teach kids that it was okay to laugh at someone's accent.
Yeah.
And I was like,
which way to fucking absolutely. Go, John Cho.
I was like, yes, John Cho, you beautiful man. He was also like very hot in this movie. I mean, he's hot like now that he's older too. He's like daddy hot. But like when he was younger.
But we talk about Marty's non-PC lines. He does like some Confucius say something in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But so then John Cho gets the let out at the end. Confucius say, Kastank, you busted. And Kastank, you busted is such like so deeply embedded in my heart as the ultimate you got bitch. Like, oh, ooh, if I could ever genuinely pull out a Kastank on somebody and tell them they've been busted, I will die a happy man.
I feel like that's not a reference everyone's going to get, you know, but maybe that makes it more powerful.
Right. Another quotable line.
Very quotable.
Let me give some other fun facts while we're here. Becky apparently knows all of these.
I knew everything. I knew it all before Zach even said.
So you knew that that Jason's last name, Shepherd, is the inverse of Marty Wolf, and it's a reference to the little boy who cried wolf. Cool. I never got that as a
kid. Like Astrid Barker. The girl who loves the dogs.
Can I tell you how much of a dumb bitch I am? When I was watching this movie as an adult today, I was like, oh my God, Marty's like what Jason would become if he never stopped lying. They're foils. I just like Zach. Totally. It's been a long time since I watched it.
And this is how public education has failed.
Wow. Okay, so before Paul Giamatti was cast, we had a couple people who were considered for the role. Bradley Whitford, Jim Carrey, as we mentioned. Joe Pesci, who I do think maybe could have crushed
it. Pesci would have been good.
Willem Dafoe.
Oh, wow. That would have been... That's like...
Unhinged.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would have been too scary.
Not too scary for kids.
Oh, yeah. Scary. That would have been an adult scary movie.
Alec Baldwin, who would have been too mean. James Woods. So, I mean, some big actors considered
Bradley
for
Whitford,
it.
Too, right?
Yeah, Bradley Whitford, yeah. Yep. But thank God we got the Giamatti.
Giamatti really puts a stamp on this movie. You got to watch. If you haven't seen the movie and you're listening to this podcast, like at least go watch the clip where he dives and gets dyed blue. It
100%.
It is a spectacle so that really holds up, that works on its own. If you haven't seen the movie, you don't even need to know what's happening with the kids. Just
also,
watch it.
Like, it's an hour and a half and and you will speed through with delight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this one is a fun shocker, and I'm sure, Becky, you know this one as well, is that right before filming the movie, Amanda Bynes was actually not the first choice to play the role. And we had Lindsay Lohan attached to star at 14, but she dropped out shortly before filming because she decided to take a temporary hiatus from acting for a year.
Because she was an overworked child.
Young Lilo, incredibly talented. Cannot believe we haven't gotten to talk about Lilo on this pod yet. But I'm thrilled that she wasn't in it.
You should watch Just My Luck. I feel like that's a good guilty pleasure Lilo movie.
I also feel like my only criticism of the movie, in my memory, was that Amanda Bynes could have had more jokes. Like,
for sure.
I feel 100%. I feel like they're like defaulting to Frankie as he's like the male lead and she's the like more of a sidekick. And I would have liked to see them share screen time more. Like if we were going back in time, which we're not. The movie's great as it is.
I mean, look, it's an hour and a half. I could add another 15 minutes. Yes.
Let's get the director's cut with like more jokes. Yeah. You know, that's got to exist, right?
What would that look like? The director's cut version.
Just more offensive jokes. Like
the red band version. Yeah. Big fat liar. Big fat fucking liar. Big fucking liar.
I would watch that video and laugh. Yeah. Somebody making a trailer for this fake director's cut that has like people doing impressions of Paul Giamatti swearing off camera.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That would be pretty good. They actually have a really like very meta joke inside the movie where what's his name? Turk from Scrubs.
Donald Faison.
He's when he finds out that Jason isn't the guy that he was supposed to be taking around. He said, "I've got some R-rated language for you, but I'm going to keep it PG. I'm going to keep it PG." And it was a PG movie.
It was a good joke.
It was cute. We also got the with Amanda Bynes trying to finish her sentence.
God, it just is hit.
It's perfect.
I agree.
It really is wonderful. It's hard to poke holes in it.
There's something nostalgic about the whole thing for me as a kid, but I also feel like I'm going to watch it. I feel like it sounds like it's just so full of joy, like full of childhood joy, full of like kids movie stuff that works. Cause there's a lot of stuff you watch and you're like,
Here's another line. Amanda Bynes is, she's tutoring Taron Killam. And
the catcher in the rye line.
He goes, "He's not literally a catcher eating rye bread." That's a great joke. That's just good.
I would not be surprised if she made up a lot of those. Especially the very like end one where she does the like crush him like a baby. Wham, wham, wham. Like that's so like Amanda show like maha of her that I'm like, I bet she did a lot of that on her own.
I want to believe it. Big Fat Liar is absolutely wonderful. This is the point where we need to decide, is it a pleasure, a guilty pleasure, or just plain guilty? It's kind of your moment to sell to the people. Becky, why should they watch it? What do you think?
I would say Big Fat Liar definitely falls heavily into the pleasure category. It's not a guilty pleasure. It is just a feel-good kid comedy that you can watch with the whole family. It's funny. It's heartwarming. There's a lot of gags, a lot of physical comedy. It's got something for everyone. Mom, dad, kids.
Will, as someone who got dragged into this room.
As someone, from what I remember, I think it's really good. And I look forward to watching it again and discovering if my childhood nostalgia holds up but I honestly feel like it will, because there's something about this conversation that just like there's joy in the movie. And then it's anchored by an, I think, all-time great actor in a, like, you know, it's just not a, I don't want to insult the movie, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, this is not high art by any means.
No.
It's entertainment product that really works. And I think Paul Giamatti is elevated above, like, he's just a great actor. He brings it to everything. He's good in literally every single thing he's ever in.
I'm going to take that baton and run with it. I also think it is a pure P crystal pleasure, the highest grade of pleasure. And it is, because it is a like a base movie that is just elevated by people firing at all cylinders. You have two incredible child actors at the top of their game, but you have incredible talent that hadn't yet even seen its full potential. So like Paul Giamatti, the people behind the screen, like Sean Levy, look at what he went on to do. Like, there is a fucking pedigree of talent in this film, and it shows. And I really genuinely believe that Paul Giamatti is like just classic, iconic in this.
One of the great American actors.
Yeah.
1,000%.
One of the great American actors in what I think one of his best roles. And like, he is so like, he's like borderline campy. And I want to see him do this again.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
And I'm glad we got to see it. Becky, anything to plug? Where can people find you?
Yeah. You can find me at BexMex2 on Instagram. You can find me same handle on TikTok. But I don't really do much there other than make fun of Republicans. So if that's not the content you're looking for, maybe don't follow me there. And definitely check out You Can Sit With Us. We are going to have some very exciting guests coming up and even a new additional member.
Heard
it
Will?
Here first. It's Will.
Wow. It's Will. It's four ladies and me. Yeah. Oh, man, I'm sure they'll drive really well with what the show's thrown down.
Will, where can people find you?
You can find me at W Whitwer on Instagram and Twitter. And I'd also like to plug a show nobody watched that has Paul Giamatti in it. He also produced it. It's called Lodge 49. It's a really great show. I can't fully explain, but he goes full Giamatti. He goes fucking to the wall. He's only in two episodes in the second season, but you gotta watch the whole thing. I promise it's worth it.
I love this idea of using your plug moment to plug other people's projects.
I mean, yeah, it's what you do when you don't have anything to plug of your own.
Yeah, well, that's great. I'm at Corn Diddy on all the things. And what have I been watching lately? You know, maybe just let go, like, write Paul Giamatti a piece of fan mail. Tell him you appreciate him. I'm sure he would love to hear it.
He's a nice man from all what I can tell.
Fingers crossed.
Oh my God. If I ever found out anything bad canceled, about Paul G,
I would be so sad.
Oh, I would be devastated.
I don't think he has a Twitter. I don't think he has a Twitter.
If he has a Twitter, he doesn't run it.
No.
It's his niece is like, you gotta do it.
Come on, Uncle Paul. You gotta do it.
You got to connect with the Big Fat Liar fans out there.
At Real Paul Giamatti.
Anyway, till next time. Oh my God!